This week's Inside EVs podcast is brought to you by Electrify America, and we're so happy to be partnering with Electrify America until the end of the year. With Electrify America, you can drive your EV from coast to coast with more than 650 charging stations nationwide and new locations opening every week. Electrify America is bringing EV drivers the freedom they need. Whether you want to plan a weekend getaway, maybe you're off to see some friends or relatives, maybe it's a coast-to-coast road trip, you can ask our Kyle about how that's done using Electrify America charging stations. Well, you can rely on Electrify America's ultra-fast chargers to get you back on the road faster. So, where will you go charging on Electrify America? Let us know in the comments below. We'd love to hear what your plans are for this weekend, and tell us where you'll go next. And you can learn more at electrifyamerica.com.
Hello, and welcome to the Inside EVs podcast for December the 10th, 2021. This is episode number 88. Our topics today, the out-of-spec EV Media Summit. The Lexus NX 450H goes on sale, and the next BMW i3 has been revealed. I'm Dominic Ioni, Inside EV's forum moderator and Inside EV's editor. Joining us today is Lacey from the Miss Go Electric YouTube channel. We also have the maestro, Mr. Martin Lee, from the EV News Daily podcast, which, of course, is available on all the best podcast platforms. And, of course, Kyle Connor joins us from the majestic halls of Jordan Schaefer's Miata. Driving across the plains of Colorado. He also puts together sublime, practically supernatural videos for the Inside EVs YouTube channel. So before we get going, I'd like to ask that you please subscribe to the show. If you're watching this on YouTube, please hit that thumbs up button and ring that bell icon for notifications. If you're watching this on Twitch, you can also ring that bell icon for notifications. All right. So with that out of the way, welcome everybody. Great to see you. All right. So Tom Logney couldn't be with us today, but I understand he's on a secret mission driving a very special EV in an undisclosed location. I don't know, Martin, do you have
I heard he's somewhere in the Indian Ocean.
Right? Well, hopefully not like in the ocean, but
maybe.
You never know, it could be snorkeling. Or maybe that thing goes underwater, who knows. So, yeah. So, we have with us Lacey today. And this is going to be a weird episode because there's not so much news that we're going to talk about, but we drove a lot of cars. And that's because Kyle here hosted the Out of Spec EV Media Summit last weekend, where he assembled about 20 years old cars. I'm not sure if he drove any of them, but we all did. So, he did, though. Go to a goodbye party of sorts for the Polestar 1 and also spent some time with the Hyundai Ioniq 5. Unfortunately, the Ioniq 5 driving impressions are still under embargo, but there are some things that we can talk about, like the range disparity between the rear-wheel drive and the all-wheel drive versions. But first of all, Kyle, fill us in a little bit on your time with the Polestar 1 plug-in hybrid.
Yeah, so Polestar 1 plug-in, and Jordan also got to drive the GTS Sport Turismo Taycan while I was filming one of them. I can't remember. Anyway, the Polestar 1 situation is quite interesting because it's going away. It was the first car in the brand's lineup. It is, the most complicated car, I think, to ever go on sale from a drivetrain strategy perspective, turbocharging, supercharging, basically pancake starter motor and then two rear electric motors. Just insane. We spent the day shredding around some amazing canyons, pretty much toasted a set of tires in a day. It was great. And had a really good time in a very special car. And it was a proper send off farewell to an important part of that brand's history.
So are there any left that you can buy?
No, I don't think so. And if there are, there's just a handful. I think there are a couple that are in the press and marketing fleet that are going to be sold off. Don't buy the blue one with white seats because we shredded that one. So, had a blast.
Do you think this is like a proper like supercar? How would you classify this thing?
No, not at all. It's like this weird electric GT with four cylinder stuff. So it's kind of interesting because you can drive it as a full EV every day. It has DC fast charging. It's 35 kilowatt hours of storage. It's got plenty of pickup in electric mode. You can lock it in electric mode and go to the floor on the accelerator pedal, and it won't turn on the combustion engine. So it's very possible to just charge it, drive it as an EV around town. But then it's also very possible to fill it up with fuel and take it on a really long trip and use the electric system as a boost, as a way to help drive the car quickly.
Right.
That's how I prefer to drive it.
And, performance enhancement, basically.
Yeah. And then you just chew through the battery so quickly. I'm shitting. I don't even know what that was. Where did that come from?
That was you. That was a clip of you, I think, being queued up.
Oh, interesting. Oh, okay. Yeah, if that's ready to go, we can do that.
Yeah. There's the Polestar 1 if you're watching. Oh.
That's
your TikTok, I believe, with the
limited numbers, but it's finally going away. So let me take you on a quick final tour of this Swede machine.
Yeah, so that's Kyle's TikTok, which everyone should go and sign up and watch his content on there, which is just brilliant. So
out of spec.
Well, I think we're shadow banned on TikTok. Someone must not have liked us because our videos used to do so well. And now they're barely, I can watch it. You know, we can count the numbers as they go. We used to do millions of views and now we're doing, you know, maybe 1,000 or 2. So yep. I'm not sure what's going on over on TikTok, but that's why we diversify platforms and we don't get too hung up on it. But yeah, head to TikTok. You can watch that. That car is just amazing. I have a video coming on Inside EVs this week on that vehicle, on our experience. I have a really in-depth 1 hour long on out of spec reviews. No surprise there. It's a special car, so I went through all the nerdy details, all the different driving scenarios, and yeah, definitely one I'd love to add to the collection one day. I think if you buy one, it will only go up in value as the Polestar popularity increases. So a good buy and hold for sure.
Right. Lacey, what do you think of this Polestar 1?
I really love the Polestar 1. It is a beautiful car. Like Kyle said, it's not really a supercar category, but it's still a nice vehicle. I like the fact that they kind of got the brand off the ground with it, is because that was Volvo concept along with the Polestar 2. And now we're really starting to see a shift with the Precept and hopefully with Polestar 3, that'll take some design cues from that. So right. I'm fascinated to see where the brand's going to go now from design language and really split off from what a traditional Volvo looks like to being their own brand. And I think just to get it off the ground, they needed to kind of make it a plug-in hybrid. But I'm glad that they're finally shifting. And now that the gas powertrain is done in the lineup right. And that they're strictly EV. But I love that car. Actually, when I used to work as a contractor for Polestar. And when I launched the Polestar 2, they took us out at their track facility there and their chief test driver drove us around the track in the Polestar 1.
Nice.
And it was really impressive. I mean, the torque vectoring on that thing was, considering the form factor and the weight and that it handled pretty well considering on the track for all those elements. So right. I love it.
Sweet. Where was that track at?
In Sweden, in Gothenburg, not too far from their headquarters.
Nice. Nice. Right on. So Kyle, you also drove the Ioniq 5, which is like probably, I would say, like the most highly anticipated car of 2022 for the US.
Yes, it is. And yeah, got to drive it. That's about all I can tell you about it.
Right. I mean, you can't tell us
that. Jordan hasn't driven it. So can you tell us if you like it?
I love it.
But he's never driven it. So.
Right. Right. But close up, was this the first time you saw it close up, Kyle?
No, I had seen it close up a few times in Europe.
Okay. In Europe, right.
And I think I was like one of the first ones to spot it in the US like a year ago. You remember at the Electrify America station in Las Vegas, I pulled up with a Mach-E. And it was like I parked right next to it. So I've seen that car for a long time. And from a design perspective, which I'm not the best at evaluating, I think it looks so cool. And it's got this like nap chair functionality and yeah, sound system has nothing to do with driving, really good sound system. So all around.
So you're really good at spotting EGMP platforms.
Yeah. Oh, and I saw a Genesis GV60 yesterday.
Yeah, I saw that. What where'd you put? Where'd you share that at?
Just on Twitter.
Twitter. Okay.
Yeah. Well, but see, I have driven the Ioniq 5, so I can tell you what it drives like because we have them over here for a long time, and I have driven one. So I would say, and I don't know if Kyle would agree or not because he's not allowed to give any impressions. But if you've driven a Kia or a Hyundai, a Niro or a Kona, it'll be familiar because they've not radically changed the infotainment system and the driver controls. So the icons look similar. They are updated, of course, because they're different size screens in there. But if you recognize the EV Leaf icon that you would push if you want to see what the car is doing, then that's going to be exactly the same. The power delivery is smooth without being, at least on the all-wheel drive version that I had, is rapid without being brutal, but that would work for many people because, you know, my wife doesn't like that kind of brutality of an EV acceleration where there is that maybe half a second of hesitancy when you floor it on the accelerator. It's not going to rip your face off. It is more of a smoother power delivery. But even then, with the top spec all-wheel drive, it's quick without being ridiculously fast, whether that is just on, you know, normal speed on public, which is all I did, normal speed on public roads, of course, but a very, very composed ride. And the great thing about that car is, I think when you look at it, it doesn't look the size that it really is. But of course, being inside it, it is like a bit of a TARDIS as well, because it's got that 3-meter wheelbase. Everything's pushed out to the edges. And it's a great experience to be inside the car because there's just so much room inside it. So very, very polished. Now, I've not driven the EV6 yet. One of my buddies who lives down the road from me, Richard, who sells cars, who came over to take part in your weekend last weekend. I couldn't do it. I was sick. But he has just bought an EV6. And again, he rates it, but says incredibly similar driving experience to the Ioniq 5. So none of that Kyle can agree or disagree with until he's allowed to.
Well, I can tell you about EV6 because I got to drive it too, and I spent some time with it. But here's the thing we're also kind of forgetting. The EGMP cars are going to be adapted to the U.S. market differently than the European cars. So I can't say exactly what that means because I never drove an Ioniq 5 in Europe. But I drove an EV6 in Europe, and I think it's going to be different than the U.S. spec EV6 in terms of chassis tuning, not so much on powertrain. I'm sure that'll stay the same. So, you know, OE tire selection, you know, spring rate, damper, roll stability, all of these things will be adapted to market-specific requirements, and it's just hard to say without driving them back-to-back what's going to drive like what. So, yeah, it's a week from today I can tell you about the Ioniq 5, and a video will be going up on Out of Spec Reviews about that car, so stay tuned, and it's a very impromptu shot thing. Yep.
Right on.
But I took it to Mexico, I can say that. I didn't actually go in the border, but I went as far as I could, and I went to a charging station that I thought on the map was in Tijuana, but it was actually in San Diego. Right on the border. Like, I was looking at the border the entire time. It was really cool.
Right. Hey, so can we talk about the range for a second? So the EPA range came out, I believe, last Friday. I'm not sure if it was before or after the show, but it's like 303 miles for the rear-wheel drive version. But the all-wheel drive version is like 270 or so. So
I thought it was 258, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's a bigger drop.
Like, it's way lower.
7 or 8% drop, maybe.
No, it's more than that.
Is it more?
No. Okay. I think I have the material somewhere. It's a stellar drop, and I have no idea why.
Because I think so. You were talking about this on, I don't know if it was on Twitter or on TikTok, but the is it permanent magnet motors front and rear? But there's
it disconnects the front.
But it disconnects the front, like physically disconnects the front tire, like
even
the Porsche
in normal mode, because like the Taycan does. Tests in Kia, yeah, but. But the problem with Taycan no longer does this on new software. And also for Taycan, in key-up setting, which is normal, everything stays engaged. In Ioniq 5 and EV6, in normal mode, their drivetrain tuning strategy is under light throttle application that the front motor is physically disconnected and then reconnects with a power, you know, load request. But it's not like it's like... they test in key up, so it should work fine. It should disconnect. I cannot figure out, you know, where the benefit of eco mode would come into this, like it would in Taycan. So why it's so low, I have no idea.
So Martin just put the, if you're watching us on Twitch or YouTube, you can see it on the screen here. Martin just pulled up the numbers, the range numbers. So it's 303 miles for the rear-wheel drive and 256 miles only for the all-wheel drive. That's a huge drop. That's weird. We'll have to get a hold of that and do some high-speed testing, I guess, right? But
We'll do the range test. I don't know if that'll tell us why.
Right.
We'll see if the results are varying, you know, massively in real world. The other weird thing is, you know, the all-wheel drive benefits from a heat pump that the rear-wheel drive doesn't. So that should even be more efficient, you would think, under most driving scenarios.
It's also weird that they would make a difference there. Like,
but we just need to dig into it farther. There's got to be something we're missing.
Okay. Well, that's something to keep an eye on. I don't know, Lacey, you
don't
have any...
I did charge the IONIQ 5. I can talk about that.
Oh, really? Oh, yes,
yeah,
true,
they told
right?
me that that's not driving dynamics. I pulled in... So everyone was driving around IONIQ 5s for the day, pulling in at 50%, 60% to the midway charger. I pull in at 1. And so, I took the same route, but obviously drove it properly. And, plugged in at 0%, ran the heater down, shot straight up to 225, 226 kilowatts, and just sat there. And then the session bricked. And... Look, I think it's on the car side or the EA side. I don't know. There was an EA representative there who listens to the podcast who was a great guy. And at the end of the day, he was like, yeah, I don't know if it's the car or the charger. It's really hard to tell. But I thought it may have been the car because I knew the car was pretty toasty from driving it so hard. However, I heard later on in the day that the person who charged after me on that same 350 kilowatt unit, Miriam, Dominic, you know her, she said that at the around the same state of charge, it bricked on her charging session too. I will say though that mine was on track for a great session. I recorded the whole thing, but because I got the battery pack too warm in the IONIQ 5 from driving it properly, then my charging session had to dip down to around 170 kilowatts to cool itself down to kind of find equilibrium. Because, with that much power, it's really hard to just keep it cool when you're already heat soaked. So, I tried to do what I had in the day, which was do a 0 to 100% and do the drive. That meant driving hard. And that was not the way to do it. It's not the way I do my typical 0 to 100s. And we've learned that at least the IONIQ 5 is very temperature sensitive to not necessarily driving, but at least charging. And yes, I did have climate control completely off. I know that was an issue in some of Bjorn's videos. Made sure climate control was totally off so it could divert all cooling to the battery pack.
Right on. So that's something I guess we'll have to look out for and have to maybe try to solve or learn more about.
I don't think it's necessarily an issue. I think any EV is going to run into that, any high charging power EV.
Right.
Taycan runs into it when I rip them down the Autobahn. Teslas run into it when we do track days. It's just, you have so much thermal mass in that battery pack. And do you size the cooling system for 95% of use case? For cost and weight and efficiency, or do you size the cooling system for the people who are going to shred them up Pikes Peak and rip them down tracks all the time? Probably not the intended use case for the car. So I think they probably took the right compromise, but we'll see in our testing coming forwards is if it is truly an undersized cooling system or an under capacity cooling system. I think it's probably totally fine. I just really, drove it quite hard.
Right on. All right. So out of spec, as I was saying, they held a big event called the EV Media Summit. It's the first one. I don't know if there's going to be a second one. Hopefully that'd be kind of cool if it was like an annual thing. But so basically they invited a bunch of EV YouTubers and others to Pasadena, California, and then persuaded a number of automakers to bring cars so we could get acquainted with them. So not every channel is fortunate enough to get access that people like Kyle or Tom Malogny do. So this was a great opportunity to learn more about all the electric vehicles out there and also to hang out with each other and, learn from each other and also, have a good time, which it was a pretty good time.
So we're at...
And Yeah, I don't know, Martin, if you want to play that clip there.
Yeah, sorry, I think I started playing it a little early. I think the sound comes out even when we're not, it's not in vision, so apologies if you heard something then. But so this is the sort of video that you just sent me. It's about a minute and a half long. Is that right, Dom?
Yes.
Okay, let me hit play, make sure you can hear this. All right, I'll take it off.
EV Media Summit, and we're...
Yeah, I just muted it so I can talk over it. Okay. So the base of operations was the roof of a parking garage that is home to Tesla Urban Superchargers, as well as these CCS DC fast chargers. So besides the cars there for the event, there was also an assortment of Teslas and a number of other electric vehicles around, and it was pretty awesome. So yeah, we got to see all these different cars. So like, there's a BMW i3, there was a Mini Cooper SE, that's an Audi e-tron. It's just going to play through as we walk down the road. I don't know what besides the cars that were there for the event, Lacey, did you see anything coming through that caught your attention?
Nothing that was too out of the ordinary. I mean, you don't see too many of them, but there was a Mitsubishi plug-in hybrid. But other than that,
that was the highlight of the whole thing. Someone DC fast charged their plug-in hybrid, which was hilarious. I loved everything about that. That was so funny.
I actually have two pictures of that. I think it came there twice, actually. And I took a picture of it both times. But I didn't.
And I remember seeing a newer version of the Bolt, too, roll in.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, sweet.
On one of the days.
Yeah.
Yeah, we saw a new Bolt and an EUV there. I think right after everyone left, parked right next to each other.
Okay. Yeah, there's all the just row of Teslas up. And that was like busy all day with Teslas, like coming in and out. It was like a crazy place to be. But it was a great center of operations. All right. So Nissan was nice enough to drop off a Leaf. That was it there briefly in the background. We can stop that one now, Martin, if you want. So they dropped off a Leaf along with a product specialist to answer any questions about it and Nissan's electrification program, so he could talk about Ariya a little bit. So I hadn't been in one in a long time, and I was kind of impressed by the interior, at least. We didn't get to drive it. It's probably one of the most affordable EVs on the market today, and it gets overlooked a lot. I don't know. Lacey, did you get a chance to check that out?
I didn't really sit in it or anything because I was more interested in the stuff that was like newer to me that I haven't gotten in. But the one thing is still that's like my hang up with the Leaf is that it's on CHAdeMO. And I mean, if you're at home charging and you don't have to go out in town and charge, then it's just fine. But I'm ready for all the CCS stuff. Yeah, like that, the Ariya. I was really stoked to see that because I hadn't seen it in person yet. And I really love that lighter interior. It kind of gives off a very different vibe than what I've been seeing in a lot of their press pictures, like with the gold version of it with the black interior.
Right.
But at first when I started seeing the Ariya in like on press pictures and even here, it kind of looks very chunky in the front and it looks a little like minivan-ish. Okay. I really liked it actually in person. So
if you're watching this, if you're just listening to us,
we're showing. We should talk about. Go ahead, Dominic.
It's okay. I just want to say that we're looking at a picture of Lacey with the Nissan Ariya. I believe the LA Auto Show.
No, so this was at Autopia 2099.
The same weekend, right?
Yeah. So the guys that run Radwood, which is a car show as well for like old, like 80s style and 90s style vehicles. They put on a new show. It was the first time that they launched this event, which is called Autopia 2099. And it was at Optimus Studios in LA, which is by the airport. And so during Kyle's event, we were able to drive the cars all over the place, but I took actually the ID4 down to go stop at this event for a little bit and then drive back and check out all the cars. Cause there, they not only had new EVs, like the Rivian R1T was there. They had some Porsches. They had a couple of the like Rebel Rally cars from Volkswagen, but they also had a lot of conversion EVs. So, and original RAV4 EV, which I talked to that guy for a really long time because I just thought it was the coolest thing and it was in original condition. It was really taken care of. So that was impressive too. But there was a converted S2000, which was awesome.
Right.
There was a Volkswagen bus. So there was just a lot of really neat stuff that kind of like combined the car culture world and EV conversion, like classic stuff that you typically get out of a show like that, and like the new Aria and some bikes. Yeah, so they had Zero was there. Livewire had a huge setup with a bunch of bikes too.
Is that a Zero?
Yes, both of those are Zeros.
I've never seen that before. Is that the new? No. What is that?
I think they did have a new bike there, but I'm not sure. I didn't spend a lot of time there. They were like set off to the side a little bit, didn't have too big of a display. But I actually headed right past that through to the Nissan booth.
Right. Hey, so Kyle, what do you want to say?
Oh no, I was talking to Jordan about what those bikes were. It was FXE on the left on the stand, and then the FXS standing up. Jordan's ridden the new FXE. We never spoke about it on the podcast. Do you want to give a quick synopsis of that bike?
Yeah, well, I did while you were gone.
Never mind. Everyone's heard about it. It's the new cheap one.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Affordable, futuristic-looking.
The wheels look a lot smaller for some reason in this picture. Maybe it's just like the photography or something.
You can get the real wheels, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, but not little donut wheels. Though you look kind of silly in the photo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, can we talk Aria very quickly? Because UK pricing came out today for Aria.
Right.
And it's between £42,000 and £59,000. And I have an app. I have an app for that. So what is that in your money? So £59,000 is... now, of course, we have 20% VAT. Right. It's $78,000. But we have 20% VAT, I should say. But still...
Right.
Starting at 42,
but it's not going to translate like that.
It can't translate, because even at £59,000, even at £42,000, to get into that car, it's still 12, 15 grand more than a Nissan Leaf. And I think from the people I've been talking to, like Nissan fans, from people eager to see what Nissan are coming with next, I do think there is a general perception that this is that they're letting the Leaf go, and that the Aria is the next thing that maybe is kind of replacing the Leaf. Need to be really clear, this is not a like-for-like replacement in any way to the Leaf, because it's a different segment size car, but also price-wise, it's, I think, asking anyone to start at £42,000 for a Nissan going up to 58.5, 59 is a huge ask for...
Right. Hey, Martin, do you get Infiniti in the UK?
No. If we do, then no. They're not that I ever see around. And it's just such a massive...
This is a good brand for Aria. We were talking to some friends this weekend about it, and we're like, Aria should have been Infiniti's new hot car and electrified that whole range. And then they would have had something interesting going on. At the end of the day, Nissan, if this thing's going to be expensive, I don't see how it competes on paper, at least, with any other car. It's got to like do something better at something to justify the extra price. And I'll tell you right off the bat, it's not the way it looks, at least to me. What do you think? Do you think it's good? No. So
right.
You mean
in like the same way that Honda are coming to the US with Acura first, albeit that's just a GM car with a different badge on it. But still, you can do something interesting with one of your other brands. I get what you mean by that. It would be...
Yeah, well, it's just, it's an upmarket vehicle, right? It's definitely going to be the most luxurious Nissan to ever launch, at least here in the US. There's some, you know, JDM spec things that are nice, luxurious, whatever. But in the US, our Nissan brands are, this is the bottom tier. You're going in and you're you know, working on a Sentra for 12 grand, 15 grand, whatever they go for. And then at the same time, you're going to ask someone to go into that same dealership and spend $60,000 on a Aria. And, you know, I can't claim any credit for this idea, but it makes sense, as some of my friends of mine. And they were like, you know, this should be Infiniti. The dealer network's there. And that brand has had nothing spicy for the longest time. They're just rebadged Nissans, basically. This would have been a really good ground up, exciting thing for that brand, at least here in the US.
Right. I think we talked about this with the Nissan rep that was there at the event, at your event, Kyle. And it seemed like they're letting just Infiniti do its own thing, like electrification wise, or I don't know. There's no rush to electrify that, I don't think, which is strange. All the new products, like the like the Leaf replacement sort of crossover we showed you last week is, you know, a Nissan and it's smaller. And I don't know if there's any, there's no word about any Infiniti plans for anything electric that I know of.
I think you can get away with it if you're Nissan, if it's 5 years ago and you are one of the EV experts and you're a leading expert in EV world, because you can say to customers, hey, look, we know what we're doing here. We've got this number one car on the market, and now here's our next one. But I think, you know, here's a car out in the middle of 2022 where the competition is so fierce that, I don't know, maybe it's just like a cultural thing. I'd love to really, I'd love to dive into it. There's such a fascinating shift happening at the minute with cars becoming more like technology. And not everybody is like Tesla, which just ships first and fixes it later. And Tesla always fix it later, I should add. I'm not hating Tesla. But then you've got the Japanese culture. If you look at the way that Toyota and, you know, Nissan, you know, the way that they came into the market decades ago and took all of that market share through these amazingly reliable vehicles, because they have a culture of prototyping, iterating, prototyping millions of miles. But ultimately, if you do that in an environment where things are moving quickly, you put a car on the market that's already out of date. Now, I'm not saying the Aria will be out of date, but they could have done this years ago with the technology they had. And even, you know, VW have gone a halfway house. They shipped the ID3 and said, well, we'll fix the software later. And they did. But maybe it's I don't know enough about Japanese car culture to know, is it just a boardroom problem at Nissan that a car is coming out next year? It's very expensive, technically not going to blow you away. Just be a solid car. But that's, if that's going to have a life cycle of 5 to 8 years and go towards the end of the decade with a midlife refresh halfway through, I just don't know who's out there going, you know what I want? I want the Nissan Aria. And there might be loads of people. And I want there to be loads of people, because the Leaf is still a cracking car if it's a discounted car. Anyway, sorry. I'm not going. I feel like I'm going on Nissan now. I'm really not. I found it frustrating. Sorry.
Yeah, we got it all guns pointed at Nissan here. You know, at the end of the day, I met some listeners on our podcast at the LA Auto Show when we went. Remember, we had the great conference. Jordan was with me. And they were all in on the Aria. And we had a long talk tonight. I was just trying to figure out, why are you so into the Aria? And it was a great conversation and very eye-opening. It was a Leaf owner who wanted the reliability that he's seen from his Leaf to go over. I don't think these people are understanding is this is an entirely new platform. Nothing is shared from the Leaf. I'm not even sure if you can even learn anything from the Leaf and apply it to this application, because liquid thermal management now is a whole new ballgame. DC fast charging under multiple sessions is a whole new ballgame. Their new motor designs, all new ballgame, new chassis, new software.
Right.
It's nothing is related to the Leaf. So I don't even know if we can say Nissan's been in the game long enough with the Leaf learning. I think they just did it all 10 years ago and they're just trying to keep it alive as much as possible. So they have a global electric vehicle to keep on sale, and the Aria is just going to be, you know, a whole new, it could be amazing, could be terrible, we just don't know.
I mean,
Lacey, what do you think?
I think it's interesting. When I first started talking to the product specialist, when luxury came out of their mouth, oh, it's a luxury SUV, and I'm like, oh, that's an interesting take. Why are they calling it a luxury vehicle in the Nissan lineup? And I think it's probably because of that price point conversation. Is like, we got to do something to kind of differentiate it in a space. And obviously it looks luxurious on the inside. I think it's a good looking car. I know some other people don't, but the form factor is just massive in the US. So people want to see more in this space. I know there's already a lot that's offered, but the more brands that we have that have this type of form factor in that space is important, because it's the best selling in the United States is those small crossovers. But to call it a luxury vehicle is an interesting strategy. And the same thought I had with as what you were saying, Kyle, was why would they spin off this as a luxury vehicle in the Nissan nameplate and not just have Infiniti take off? Because they're so, like, they haven't done anything. like you said, it's really sad to see. But, you know, I don't know. That's kind of my take on it, is that it's weird that they're calling it a luxury vehicle under the Nissan nameplate. And I think the only reason that they're really having to do that is because that price point.
Makes sense. Well, okay, well, we could talk about RA for a while, but I think we should move on. We have a ton of cars to talk about. So I think the star, one of the stars of the show was undoubtedly the Porsche Taycan GTS Sport Turismo. We couldn't drive it. I think Kyle just said that Jordan has driven it, and I believe Kyle has driven it as well, right? I don't know. Can you talk about that yet, the driving experience?
All embargoed for until when?
Tuesday or Wednesday. So I can't talk about how it drives, but well, that glass roof.
Right.
Yeah, we can talk about that, but that's not GTS specific. Right. That will go to all.
I have cars. I've got a video clip, actually, so let me see. Where's my notes here? So we could Kelvin Kim, the Taycan specialist in North America, was on hand to answer all our questions about the car, and he was very generous and giving numerous groups of us a demo of the car's party trick. And Martin, can you play that? Play us that, right, this with the sound on.
Taycan GTS Sport Turismo, and right now it's in the open position, just kind of like a regular panoramic glass roof. It's right, it still has a lot of passive filtering of infrared and UV. But for those that want a little bit more, you can then close the glass.
Okay.
And as you can see, it's very responsive.
Oh, this is completely opaque now?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then there's two unique modes that show off the individual segments that you can kind of use. Like, for example, this one blocks the sun perfectly for me. This one lets the sun in. But I think a mode that people will really appreciate is the roller blind mode, which lets you set the position manually. And you can control that right on the head, on the display.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and it's very, very responsive. It's laggy on the screen, but it translates very well onto the roof itself.
Right on.
Yeah.
So it reduces the heat inside the car?
Big time.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
So that was pretty cool. So the glass roof of the Taycan GTS Sport Turismo has a liquid crystal film on it that can be either transparent or opaque. And as you saw in the clip there, it's in like 9 different sections, irregularly shaped sections. So it's kind of looks pretty. I don't know. Lacey, did you get that demo?
I didn't, but it's just funny because the Germans would over-engineer something like that.
Right? It is over the top a bit. It is. Right?
But it's cool. I mean, you see that kind of stuff in the supercar segment, so it's cool to see something like that.
I'm all in on this roof. I would not stop playing around with it for like an hour. You just drove the car. You can't talk about it. But did you notice while driving, not driving impressions, did you notice the heat reduction from the roof?
Yes.
Okay. I don't think that's considered driving, though.
No.
Good.
I was sitting still.
Nice.
Right on. So, Martin, do you have that picture of the Sport Turismo on hand?
Oh, just, like, okay. The picture of the Sport Turismo.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure. Sorry. I do. Let me look for that. You carry on. I'll look for that.
Right on. So I'm not sure if we really talked about the Sport Turismo somewhat. I think we talked about it somewhat, but basically, it's the Cross Turismo, but it's lower and it doesn't have the plastic cladding around the wheel wells. And there it is on the screen there, if you can see it. It's the one that we had there was German spec, so it's got the, it doesn't have amber on the front fenders there, the little turn indicators. It looks really nice like that, actually. If you could, I don't know. I'm kind of in love with this car. It was pretty nice.
Yeah, but the side markers, that takes 2 seconds to pop in and out. Everyone who's a Porsche enthusiast pops in the German spec ones.
Right. It was interesting, Kelvin, talking about the Porsche's philosophy of building his cars. I think he said something, the engineer for driving in Germany, right? They're like made to go on the Autobahn. They're not really made for the U.S., but, you know, they obviously work fine here, but, you know, that's just like their overall.
That's the case for most German cars. Like, why does an A-Class need to do 150 miles an hour? Well, just because there's only one place you're really going to do that, but everyone does it. And it's a very cultural thing. Even features like, Dominic, I don't know if you noticed, the EQS does this. Every Mercedes pretty much does this, where you roll up to a stoplight and it comes up on the display with a picture of the stoplight. In the U.S., this isn't really needed because we put our stoplights on the other side of the intersection in most cases. But in Europe, specifically in Germany and in Stuttgart, they're always on the side of the car and you're always looking out the windshield like this. So it's like when you start driving cars that are made in their markets. Weird things like that are just like, oh, I get it, but I'm going to keep that off for my use case.
Yeah, but I remember you saying before, Kyle, that when you drive German cars on the Autobahn at 150 miles an hour and they're locked in their lane and they're just so stable and you go, oh, right, that makes sense. That's how the engineers wanted this car to drive. So it kind of makes sense. Of course, you do that speed anywhere else and it's, you know, lose your license time. So that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, the Taycan's top speed isn't really that high. It's 160 or 260 kilometers per hour, 155, 158, depending on spec, whatever it is. It's not actually that fast, but it can sit there all day. You get into a 911 and they'll sit at 200 all day. And look, here's an Audi R8 broken down on the side of the road.
Oh,
sorry, guys. Well, and
Audi R8 was in the news this week because the head of RS Sport, she was saying that they're going to the next R8 will be all electric. That was an aside. Anyway, there you go.
Yeah, right, exactly. I was just about to say that. Great segment. That was perfect. But yeah, I mean, I think we can imagine. So I have not driven the GTS variant of Taycan. It's important to remember there's two different things going on here at the same time. There's the launch of the GTS trim level, which sits between 4S and Turbo. And Tom was able to talk about that. And driving impressions are open on the sedan. So I think Tom took it on track and we can read his review on Inside EVs, I guess. I'm not sure what he did with it, but so that's one car. Then the secondary car is the new body style variant, which is Sport Turismo, which currently is only available in GTS trim. Don't be surprised if in a year or two they allow Turbo S or some other stuff to be Sport Turismo. I don't think that will stay exclusive to GTS trim. Just depends on take rate. But basically that's what's embargoed is the wagon stuff.
Right. All right. Hey, so let's move on to the next vehicle. So the Rivian R1T showed up for a couple hours on Sunday, and it was like a YouTuber magnet, basically. I hadn't seen it in person since CES a couple years ago, but it was really interesting to kind of see it in public. Turn that there. You can see it on the screen there if you're watching this on YouTube or Twitch. It's like backing into the spot, and like, you know, immediately after that, it was like swarmed over, and the gear tunnels were opened, and people were crawling in and out of it, and the front trunk, and also the tunnel in the back. It has like a retractable tunnel cover that you can just operate. There's little switches on the back. Let's see. So I don't know, Lacey, was this your first time seeing this truck?
No, I've seen it several times, but to your point with the tonneau cover, that was the one thing that I actually like knocked on, because I thought I remembered initially seeing that the power folding come over and it was almost like a fabric material and not hard. And this actually, I was impressed with how thick and hard the tonneau was. It was like a polymer or some kind of composite that was really, really strong and sturdy. So, like, you could set stuff on it and it would be just fine. So that was one thing that I had noticed that was, you know, I've seen it so many times in person, but I actually had the ability to feel it, because all the other times that I've seen it, they have not allowed that to be out yet because it wasn't fully baked. So yeah, I thought that was kind of interesting, and I liked how robust it was.
What's your impression of how the truck has changed over the different times that you've seen it as it's become closer to that production version?
Well, I haven't driven it, so, and I think that's probably going to be the big main thing. But, you know, the fit and finish has always looked pretty good to me. This one, you could tell, like, yes, it was closer to final stages. I think he told me it was still a demo fleet car. So it was in their marketing fleet or something like that. It wasn't actually a customer car. But, you know, it looked great, I thought. And I've always thought that the interior looks really great. I would love to play around with the screens and everything and kind of get a little bit more time driving it. But that time will come.
It's interesting. Mm. Dan Neal from the Wall Street Journal just had a review of the if you're watching this if you're not watching this on YouTube or Twitch, Martin's just popped up a picture of Kyle through looking through the other side of him through the gear tunnel. So, Daniel just published a review on Wall Street Journal that was not like positively glowing. Like so many reviews have been really super positive, but you know, Dan had some issues with it, like the screen up functioning, and I think he even had a problem with the tonneau at one point, and he didn't like the weight. It's like 7,000 or so pounds. But I mean, he had lots of positive things to say about it as well, of course. But yeah, it's interesting anyway to get that perspective, because I know we can get a little bit over enthusiastic, exuberant sometimes, because it's, you know, there's so much to love about this. But you know, no vehicle is perfect. So if you want like another kind of viewpoint, I'd suggest, you know, checking out that review. I don't know, anything you want to see about this, Martin?
Can we get them over here as soon as possible?
Right.
It's just not going to happen. I still think that their priority of that company for now is getting Amazon vans out of the door.
Right.
It's guaranteed revenue. They've got all the goodwill in the world. So their customers will wait forever for those vehicles. No one's going to be complaining and saying, well, if I didn't get it in the next 3 months, I'm going to cancel that and get an F-150 Lightning or whatever. A different vehicle, a different price point. It's in a way that the luxury that Tesla has. So I think they're going to make their retail customers wait forever, right? Because the Amazon stuff is money in the door. Not that they need it now they're public, but right. I just think if they don't, it's just going to be a massive headache for them in terms of the investment they've had to get them to this stage with Jeff Bezos. So I would love to see these in as many places as possible. I still think that they're going to be making them in the tens or the hundreds, not the thousands per week.
Right. So you've said this before, and I was kind of like, I didn't want to agree with you. But then, like this, so this weekend, I heard like rumors that like somebody who knows somebody who works at Rivian was like, yeah, that's kind of what the deal is, you know? The people who are driving Rivians right now are employees. Like there's, you know, dozens, or I don't know if there's hundreds of them out there already, but
Rivian have only got things to lose. They are loved by most people. They're making great vehicles.
Yeah.
They've got so much goodwill, and they can only get it wrong from here if they rush these vehicles out to customers. And all of a sudden, the software's not finished, or it's laggy, and YouTube videos are gonna hit. Like there was one of the early buyers of the Lucid Air Dream Performance Edition made a half-hour YouTube this week of them running through the infotainment system. And it simply wouldn't show the EA station that they were next to. And it's like, that only does harm to Lucid. Nothing good can come from Rivian rushing these vehicles out. So I think they're on the top of the mountain at the minute. I don't think they're going to get many of them out the door, which is a shame. So I'd love the R1S. It's a stunning vehicle. Truck culture. We don't have truck culture here. But yeah, R1S looks amazing. So we'll wait and see. I'd like to be proven wrong.
I think they plan on being international. Like they have Australia, I think, in their sights as well. And
yeah, so the UK government showed them, Rivian came over this week or last week and showed them the site near Bristol in Somerset, which is where Extreme E is going to be next weekend. But they showed them a site that the UK government were trying to persuade Tesla into. But you know, the UK government promising to build new motorway junctions, reinstate a railway line that used to go through, anything just to get that investment here. Of course, Rivian, I think, are looking at Serbia, looking at the Netherlands, they're looking at any other place in the world. You know, which is the best package of incentives that we can get? And obviously, I'm, you know, a few miles, maybe more than a few miles away from Bristol, but not a long way from me. And it would be great to have something like that nearby. It would be fantastic if they would expand into this country, whether they would make the vehicles, the batteries, both of the above, commercial vehicles. We don't know yet. So, it's just exciting to talk about.
Right.
So someone says on the screen, one of the comments is people have cancelled their Rivian order for an F-150. I guess because F-150 Lightning, I think in my head, 40 grand because of the commercial version. But it does go up. Yeah, it does go. It is a premium. You can spec it premium.
Right. But, I mean, Rivian will go into hands of regular buyers before the F-150 Lightning will, though, I believe, right?
Do you think so?
I think so. I'm not
okay.
I've seen a lot of people, even with like launch edition vehicles, still saying that they're not going to get their cars until like late spring, of next year. And then I also have a pre-order on a max pack, and I'm not like, I was the initial estimate for time on that was January of this, like 2022. And I just do not see like getting it anytime before the first half of the year. Like right. There's just like, to me, there's no chance. I think they're doing a lot to control driving impressions and the experience that people are having around the car. And obviously we're seeing that with the delivery of the, you know, first cars going straight to employees. So they're being extremely cautious right now because yeah, they have everything to lose.
Right on. All right. So let's move on to something else. The Polestar 2 was also on hand. I think Martin, we have a shot of it in the garage beside the XC40 Recharge. But I believe that it was somebody's Turo rental, so we couldn't drive that one. It was there. We could see it.
It was great. An Enterprise rental because Enterprise. Now you can just go to Enterprise and rent a Polestar 2 Performance Pack, which is the craziest thing ever.
In
LA.
I
absolutely love it. And one of my friends rented one just by accident. He just walked up to the counter. They gave him Polestar 2, and he was so excited about it. This is just a friend who didn't ask for it ahead of time or anything like that.
That'd be awesome. Yeah. So it's funny, we were looking at the shot of it beside the XC40 Recharge, and they have the same powertrain underneath of them, which is kind of crazy. So, I didn't drive the Polestar 2, but I did drive the XC40 Recharge, and I believe, Lacey, you did too?
I didn't drive the XC40 Recharge, but I spent a lot of time with the Polestar 2. I actually, as far as I understood, Kyle, that was your favorite of the bunch over the weekend was the XC40 Recharge.
I thought it was the silent winner. It really was. When you factor in the image, the build quality, the new charging curve, which we got to test, it did everything well. There's still like some minor updates I really want to have. Like, I just don't like the throttle pedal. It just kind of bugs me every time I put my foot down. It's way too aggressive and it doesn't ramp up. I want it to go full throttle and actually have a bit of artificial delay getting to full power if you want to encourage keeping your foot down. But at the end of the day, I mean, the car was wonderful. I just can't wait for the big electric Volvos to come out.
Real quick, one thing that I like about that platform is that the way that the battery is shaped and the T shape is when you're sitting in the back seat. And you know, a lot of EVs, since they're all skateboard, your knees kind of feel like they're sitting up a little bit higher. In this, you kind of are a little bit more like normal positioning when you're sitting in the rear because of that, the way that the pack is situated with like a T shape. So under the seats and also like through the center tunnel of the car. So and that helps for handling too. So you know, I think I like both of those cars. I think the fit and finish and the quality and the comfort is really great, but they also handle really well.
Right. I thought the ride was really nice. Like it's a crossover. You're sitting up high. It's you know, but it feels very premium. The materials in the cabin are premium. We just showed a shot of the interior a little bit there, and everything looks, you know, nice. But to Kyle's point though, the power, the throttle mapping, I was in city streets, so I couldn't hold it down for very long, like maybe a second and a half, 2 seconds. No, I couldn't do it for 2 seconds. It was nuts. Because you're driving this like very, you know, premium feeling, but it's a crossover. It's like an SUV that I put my foot into it, and it's like it really took me totally by surprise how fast, how quick it was. But like Kyle was saying, maybe just like calm that down a little bit, maybe lengthen the acceleration.
Yeah, so I think the overall power level is fine. If I'd actually want, like, you know, me, I could go for double the power and be just as happy. But I think, you know, just the way that it makes progressive power throughout the throttle, the way I would like it to be a little bit is, you know, ramp up a little bit towards the end, if you will. So have a little bit easier to modulate throttle initially, and then ramp up the additive power towards the end, you know, the last 20%. Right. But overall, you know, we're nitpicking. Brake by wire system's insanely well calibrated. ESP is really good on the car.
Yeah.
All around is, that car is just insanely good.
Right on. Hey, so let's talk e-tron GT.
Nope.
Audi.
It's RS. Audi RS.
I was going to ask you GT. If it was, is there, there's, they're not all RS though, right?
No, you can get an e-tron GT, but this one's right. The RS e-tron GT.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask you about that, right. So, Lacey, you looked very much at home in this car. it's like you were meant to drive it. Did you take it up the Los Angeles Crest Highway?
I did. So actually, I was with Jordan.
Okay.
We ripped it up and down when we were hitting sunset. So we had a couple pictures online. That was really fun. We had the whole group go up and rip the cars up and down the mountain. It was really funny because by the time we got up to our like landing spot, we're all like, oh God, we have like 20 miles of range yet. And actually the Mustang Mach-E had like even less than that.
5%, something like that.
But it was, you know, of course we went downhill and captured a lot from regen and made it just fine. But it's a fun car. I took it initially on my first go around, just kind of around town and on the highway to give it a little juice. But, you know, what I liked about it is that it's like you could see someone buying this as like a daily driver type car, but it also it has, you know, good performance to let it rip a little bit more. And initially when I first drive it, I was like, man, this is a car I need to get up on those good winding roads on Angeles Crest.
Right.
And, you know, I was being a little cautious at first because I had Jordan in the car with me and he hadn't driven with me before. So I'm like, all right, I'll take it a little easy. But, you know, on our way down, we hit a little bit of traffic. So I didn't get to like push it as hard as I wanted to, but you can tell just that, you know, the handling is there. The comfort is there.
The interior seats.
For me, the interior for me is like reminds me a lot of, and you know, Volkswagen is guilty of this, is not necessarily in like the ID4 and stuff like that, but at the higher end level stuff, a lot of the similar vibe and buttons and knobs and stuff that you'd see out of their higher end cars. Like I was getting really, really Lamborghini vibes in it.
Okay.
But you know, I mean, that's not terrible.
Right. It could be worse. I noticed in the back seat, the fold down thing in the middle, that was the same piece in the Porsche Taycan, little fold down armrest thing. Yeah, there's a few other little things. I personally prefer the Taycan interior, but the RS was a nice place to spend some time. Like the massaging seats, I really loved. What I didn't like is the 2-speed transmission thing. You know, like I was talking to Kyle about this, so I was maybe 5 miles an hour or so and like floored it, and it's just like a boom boom kind of. It's just unsettling. Instead of I'm used to like electric vehicles, you know, just go right, and this was like a two punch thing. What are you saying, Kyle?
I don't think I'm here. I'm not here to defend the 2-speed decision, but I do think driving the car in the correct mode for your driving style tells it what you want to do, which is in dynamic mode, it locks it in first gear and then only shifts at the point where it needs to shift. So you'll never have this downshifting sensation, but it certainly is a little bit annoying to be driving slowly in comfort mode and go, oh, I want to nail it, and then have this lag, and then it just slams you like you've been rear-ended because it's got so much power.
Yeah.
But Jordan, you and I shredded it up Angeles Crest after the event. It's the only car I drove all weekend because I wanted to shoot a video with that one on a performance drive. And it's amazing how different the character is to Taycan. I mean, I've driven e-tron GT, not the RS, extensively, and I've driven the RS on some really tight Italian rally roads where, you know, I'm concerned about working with that much width wider than my mirrors and not really pushing the car as hard as I would like. And yeah, this was a great opportunity to just go full send up the hill, and it's so different than Taycan.
Yeah,
two totally different cars at the end of the day from their calibrations and for two totally different buyers.
Right. I found the e-tron a little, you know, looser. It didn't have that like nailing the apex kind of feel that you probably could, but it's just it's a more relaxed kind of feel to it.
I felt like the steering, even in the dynamic mode, was very loose. Like to your point, like I was like, okay, when's it gonna
right?
give me a little bit more resistance. It was very loosey-goosey, but that's why I say it's like a daily driver to me. That's like, it felt more like that. That's what they were trying to do. I mean, you can definitely get it to play around, but it was definitely not tight on the dynamic for the steering portion of it.
Right.
So we did some skinny skids in that car, some big drifts, and allegedly, and it does that really well. So that's good. Okay. We had a big cloud of smoke, allegedly, with the car. And so, yeah, burn rubber, not fuel. But at the end of the day, taking it up Angeles Crest, I bet it's just as fast as Taycan up the hill, or near as makes no difference as quick. That car is so stupidly fast for being heavy as it is. It's just so much softer than Taycan.
To Lacey's point, it's like e-tron GT grand touring.
Yeah.
So it's like, I would love to take that across the country.
When you get in like a Turbo S sedan and put the dampers on full, that car is so hardcore. I mean, it's just like, we were talking to our friend Calvin, the Porsche guy. He's like, it's literally like the car is just on the edge the whole time. And you feel that. The GT was just like, you could just drive it wide open, one finger on the steering, and you're just mobbing up the road. Probably just as fast, but so much more comfortable. To me, I'm much more of a Porsche guy. I love the hardcore nature of that Taycan. Things just insane that Porsche went so crazy on that car. And then the GT is just the relaxed version for people who may not value performance as much, but still want an Audi RS car. And it is fast, but it's not as fast as the top end Taycans. And so I was even noticing down the straightaways, like, come on, give me a little bit more here. I was just like wide open everywhere, and it just needed another, like when you use launch control in any of the J1 chassis cars, you get significantly more power than just nailing it with the accelerator pedal. What we want is just the launch control power all the time in the RS e-tron GT, and they can just software update it to do it. The componentry can handle it. Obviously, you can access it.
Right. All right. Hey, so let's talk Mercedes EQS 450E. So I got picked up at the airport in the EQS, and we took a slight detour on the way down. So we stopped, went along Sunset Boulevard through Hollywood, which was kind of cool. I'd never been there before. So it was there that I was really introduced to the magic of the rear wheel steering. So we were in the left lane, and we wanted to pull a U-ey. British John, the driver, he pulled it, you know, no problem. Like we had two lanes to work with, and it just whipped around. There was like no, it didn't come close to curbing wheels or anything like that. It was very comfortable. It's like magic though, because it's a large-ish car, right? I drove it for a while on Saturday myself, and it was the first thing I drove, I believe. And I just wandered down some random streets, and I was going to rely on the navigation system to get me back, but. However, I'm not actually used to navigation systems because I live in Tallahassee. I know where I'm going. I never use them. And so it took me a while to get unlost a bit. Kyle's point, that front camera thing. So that took me by surprise. I was like looking at the navigation, trying to figure out the thing. And then every time I come up to a traffic light, like the front camera was showing me the... Martin, do you have a picture of the front? There's a display of that so we can see what that looks like. We just pop up, and I'm looking at the thing, and it's like kind of annoying. But now that
A setting you can toggle. You can turn
right. Right.
Up your icon, you just hit that, and then it shuts off forever.
Okay, I didn't find out. I think I would need to spend like a week with this thing to figure out all the little features and everything with it. Yeah, that's the picture of the center console we're looking at there, That frame in the middle over the map is like the traffic light. It just like pops up with the navigation. I think that's the video too, right? So if you want to hit play on that, we can like...
For some reason that video isn't playing. Leave it with me.
Okay.
Can we say something about traffic lights in Mercedes products?
Yeah.
We never tested the EQS in our town, but we tested the combustion S-Class in our town, which is an unbelievably amazing car. And it accurately counted down the red light until it turned green every time. I don't know how it did it. magic, I'm sure. So I imagine the EQS has this feature too, because in the heads-up display on the combustion S-Class, it would say 15, 14, 13 seconds, and then bam, it would hit green at the right time, every time. It was the best.
Huh, that's crazy.
Sorry, I missed. When you were over here, Kyle? Yeah.
No, this is in my town in Colorado.
Oh, man.
I had no idea we had like a connected system. Or I know that.
They've been doing that in the European cities using the 5G network and connecting the cars and the traffic signals and the street furniture up. I didn't know they were doing it outside of Europe. That's very,
well,
very cool.
It worked, right, Jordan? It worked perfectly in little old Fort Collins, Colorado.
So this was the 450E that we had here. Was that rear-wheel drive?
450 plus.
450 plus. Oh, I'm sorry. So that's all-wheel drive?
No, rear-wheel drive. The 580 is the 4MATIC.
Oh, right. So I thought, you know, power was still great. It had, you know, plenty of power, and it wasn't crazy like the Tesla Model S Plaid or even the 100D, but it was still plenty quick. Ride was great. I don't know, Lacey, do you think it's up to S-Class level, this car?
I think the quietness, all the tech in it, I really love the EQS. I think it's like you were just mentioning the Plaid. So I was able to ride in the Plaid with one of the German guys that flew out for, because they had it. I don't know. Did they rent it or something? I don't know where they got that from. But they were like, hey, do you want to go for a ride in the Plaid? And I was like, of course I do. Yes, thank you.
Maybe that was a Turo. I don't know.
Yeah, I think so. Something like that. But I have a 90D, and it was nice to see the difference between the Plaid and my car. There were significant materials upgrades, and it was a lot quieter, and obviously the performance is nuts. I like to see the interior of it become closer to what we can expect from the German luxury makers. But I mean, then when you get in the EQS and you sit in that thing and you're just like, the stitching, the detail, the wood finish, the way the materials sit in it is just a class on its own. It's like, I don't know if Tesla can ever reach to that point unless, you know, like maybe in like 15 years, 20 years. I don't know. Because also they come up with these little things that you would not even think to pay attention to in the German brands, which Kyle had posted one of the videos the other day, is like, oh, when you go reach your hand over to the passenger side, a light shines down so that you can see a little bit better. It's part of the assistance to be able to, you know, facilitate more action in the cabin with like gesture controls and things like that. And just those little details in the technology, it just puts them in the luxury class so far ahead for me that I wish Tesla could like get to that point. And obviously they do a lot of really cool things too, and are just extremely, you know.
Yeah, Tesla has good fart noises.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel like if Tesla introduced a feature where when you look to the left-hand mirror and then change the wing mirror, when you look to the right-hand mirror, it changes. I think if Tesla introduced that, they'd get criticized for being tech for tech's sake. But when Mercedes do it with the EQS, and it just works brilliantly because you've got that front-facing radar and, you know, in the dash, everyone kind of celebrates it. So maybe they've got license to do it with the electric S-Class, maybe.
To me, it's like, if you're spending that much money and that's the stuff that I get, like, why can't I get it at that much for in any other automaker? That's like my point of view on it. It's like, if you're going to classify yourself as a premium segment and price yourself at that price point, obviously there's a buyer to buy what they're selling right now, but I just want to see that expectation ride. Like, I want massaging seats. I think that at EQS, it did really better than like an air bladder system. It feels a little bit more aggressive in the EQS, which I really like because it reduces that fatigue and everything on the longer trips. But it's just stuff like that that I wish at that price point, it should be like, yeah, I should get this.
Right. Hey, how do you turn on the massaging seats in the EQS? Because I couldn't find them. Controls anywhere.
You just go home, comfort, and then start, or you can set it as a favorite, so you can just swipe down from the top and hit that, or you could just say, hey Mercedes, massage program on the driver's seat or something.
Why
like
didn't
that
I say hey Mercedes? I
turned it off in that car because it drives me nuts whenever I start filming with Mercedes. I knew everyone was going to be in there, when you start saying the Mercedes EQS, it starts going on with the interior system. So
it
I
was
turn
working
all
for
that
me.
Garbage off.
It was working
oh,
for
well,
me.
Maybe someone put it back on then. I should have had that off. You can hit the button on the wheel still, but
yeah,
I don't like the prompt command words.
There was just like so much going on with this car, like, you know, controls and knobs and features and, you know, there's, I think
so
I would
you found need, it to be overwhelming because I think it's really simple.
I would
I
need a week.
It's got like
kind
really,
of absorbed.
I think it's like
I'm
5 minutes. MBUX is so easy. Everything you need. It has this one layer approach to the screen. It's like put it in drive and go. And then if you want to find more stuff, you can. But honestly, you just go through the settings. You just click every button you can find once, you get it set, and then you never have to touch anything again.
Right.
So and the AR head up display was awesome.
Oh yeah. Oh the right. I think
and
we can see that.
And
a little
there's
bit
lots
of that
on
it
as well. It's like of all the head-up displays, it's packed full of information.
I
like,
love that.
Yeah.
Give me all the info you can up there.
Yep.
Like some will have like the ID cars will have maybe the speed and then your next direction where you're turning, whereas the EQS is like here's everything you need to know, your efficiency, here's some superimposed you know stuff. It's amazing.
It's got the largest heads-up display of any production head-up display unit, and it's magical. Everything about that car is just magic, except for the way it looks. Why does it have to be so ugly? It has the best functionality, the best driving dynamics. It's a good thing it's nice to be inside because you just don't want to get out to look at the damn thing. It's so ugly. What do you think?
I agree, yeah.
Okay.
Jelly bean on wheels.
Lacey, what do you think,
thinking?
Lacey?
Ugly. I'm sorry. It's ugly.
No.
Really? I thought it was a lot better looking in person, you know, because I got those jelly bean vibes through the image, through the press photos and everything, but in person it wasn't as bad. It doesn't look as striking as an S-Class, I think, you know.
The worst spec one, too. They're like, let's send for everyone to take photos, the one on the ugly little wheels. They should have sent the blue one with the white seats, with the big wheels, then it looks a little bit better, but this was such a bad spec. Really was. I mean, thanks for them sending it. Look, everyone got to enjoy the car. And the point of the car is not styling. The point, you know, I love the EQS because it's amazing to drive and it's got all the tech, but man, it is not a looker.
Right.
Can I just say, one of the reasons why I love Kyle is that he decides to host an event that's an ambitious thing to do anyway, with let's get all the manufacturers to give us all their cars. And then when they send one of the best cars in the world, he goes, well, that was a terrible one to send. So,
I'm appreciative of them sending it, but I'm not going to say I like the car because they sent a car. You know, I do like the car. I mean, like the way it looks. They should have sent one on bigger wheels.
Yeah, well, you pulled the event off, so...
At least this 450 plus had a hyperscreen because I drove the 580 and I really loved that. But I'm glad that at least this option.
580 standard, 450, $7,300 option. And then I think there's only one in the country in the media fleet that doesn't have it. Personally, I don't know about you guys. I would skip the hyperscreen because I think it's so silly. You just get the nice, you know, flowing screen like we tested in the combustion S class with normal MBUX. You skip the passenger stuff. They didn't pay for the car. They don't need a screen. And then, you know, then you have a nice wood dash inside. That's the way to do it.
The passenger screen on the car that we had on the weekend just had the 80s stylized picture of the concept over there anyway.
Sit in the passenger seat, then it's a full separate Mercedes-Benz user experience system from the like traditional cars that runs on a completely different computer. It's so complicated. It's got like a million processors and all this haptic feedback, and the glass is insanely complicated to make. But at the end of the day, I think the wood suits the character better in the base screen. I know everyone's excited about the hyper screen, but it's just three individual screens behind one big piece of glass. And to me, the more time I spend with it, the less I kind of like it.
What I liked about it is that the way that it's curved, it has like a really good angle on it so that there's no glare. Like that's at least when I drove it around with a lot, there was sun popping in the windows all the time. That's the one thing that I really liked about the hyperscreen is that the way that it's curved up a little bit is that you have a good visible eye line without having any glare to it.
That's a good point. Yeah, I didn't notice any glare when I was driving it either, actually.
Which is impressive for something that big.
Yeah. Right on. So, let's see, VW ID4 all-wheel drive was there. I didn't drive it.
Can I say one more thing about the S-Class?
Sure.
The EQS.
EQS. Yeah.
Jordan, is that not the most amazing car to drive? Like, genuinely, though?
So comfortable, yeah.
It's insane. And the rear steering is otherworldly. Watching it go down the parking garage, people were coming up to me like, is that car broken? Are the rear wheels going to fall off? I'm like, no. It, like, spins on a dime. Driving that car, the thing was, at the end of the day, if I had to take any car home from that entire event and they're like, you need to keep one car for the next 5 years, whatever it is, I'm driving that EQS home. And I actually prefer the 450 over the 580. And I really love that rear motor with 2 3-phase AC units, basically on one motor. So it's a 6-pole motor. So there's no motor cogging. It's really cool. And so, yeah, I'm all about the EQS life. I would just put a cardboard box around it.
Right.
So instead, we drove 20 hours in this Miata.
Yeah, we drove the Miata home.
Right. You guys have been up all night long.
The road trip, one of them home. That's right. We have. We have to rush to get to a shoot.
Right. You drove through a snowstorm basically for 8 hours, like earlier in the middle of the night to Arizona.
And we're about to go through another one. All these clouds off in the distance is the big storm coming in. So that's another reason we had to drive through the night, because summer tires on the Miata, we had to get ahead of the storm.
Right. Okay. So VW ID4 all-wheel drive. I don't know if you want to say anything about this, Lacey.
Yeah, I actually drove that to the Autopia 2099. So I got some good seat time. I think it was about it was only like 20 miles, but in LA, it's like 40.
It's lifetime.
Something like that, which is actually pretty good. But I did a review on the rear wheel drive first edition.
Okay.
And so this was my first chance in driving the all-wheel drive. And I was actually impressed, because on paper, it doesn't seem like it's much faster. But when you drive it, it feels really great and feels peppy. So I appreciated the difference between the rear-wheel drive version and the all-wheel drive version's performance. Because initially, when I took the rear-wheel drive, I was like, pedal to the metal. I was like,
Right.
Not. I mean, it's fine. For what it is.
Right.
I thought it was a big difference. It felt like a much bigger difference than what's on paper for that. And I just love the ID4. It's such a good, solid car. It's one right at the top that I would recommend to people that are just getting into EVs.
Definitely. I think Kyle has the same similar opinion. Yeah. And I would too, actually. I would definitely recommend. I have no hesitation to recommend that car. Like, it's a good value for the price. And I didn't drive it at this event, but I drove it at the launch, and I really enjoyed I love the power. Like, I heard someone say it was like felt like 15% more power, but to me, I drove both versions. I thought it was a good solid 50% more power, which is, I think, mathematically exactly
is 50% more horsepower.
Right.
It goes from 200 to 300, 150 right. kilowatts to, I forget the exact number, 220, something like that. Anyway, did we ever talk about us rallying ID4s on the podcast?
Last weekend.
You did, okay.
Last week. Okay. We had a little clip of you in the desert, like, doing, like...
We put that on the show? Okay, I thought we hadn't talked about it yet, and I wanted to make sure we did. It was so much fun.
Right. Yeah, look great. And that's on that video is on the Out of Spec Reviews channel.
Yep.
Okay, awesome. So if you want to see ID4 all-wheel drive
and rear-wheel drive rally style.
Right. Rally style in the desert. Yep. Check out the Out of Spec Reviews YouTube channel.
Yeah. But the crossover between people interested in ID4s and people interested in taking them on dirt fast is very small. So most people that watch this show are interested in efficiency and value for money and consumer buying advice.
Right.
Not going, and then there's us.
All right. Hey, let's talk Model S Plaid and 100D for a moment. So we had
100D's old.
Oh yeah, what do they call it now? This the regular one?
It's just the long range.
Long range, that's right. Sorry. So if you're looking on the screen here now, this is the Plaid version somebody had. I couldn't drive that one. I think, Lacey, you said you went for a ride?
Yeah, it was the acceleration. You can tell, in my opinion, like, I was in the back seat.
Okay.
But you could tell that it has really great like straight line acceleration, but we're on the highway and we're kind of curving a little bit. And I was like, this is probably going to get squirrely if you're trying to like corner with this thing. That's at least how I felt. It felt kind of sketchy, to be honest. But when I was sitting in the back seat and we launched, literally like just the fluids in my body, I could felt like rush to the, I've not experienced that in many cars. Right. That thing is, it's wild.
It ruins everything because nothing will ever drive like that car. It's so cool. I'm such a Plaid fan. But for all the different reasons that everyone else is, Lacey, I think you would agree with me. It's like the ultimate embodiment of the new age of muscle cars. Yeah. Rockets in a straight line, but like can't do anything else. It's a great daily too. It's very comfortable to drive every day. You put all your stuff in there. It's big. Just don't try and drive it fast on a track or a back road. But holy smokes, the motors sound cool. You can just feel the stress in the chassis and it's life changing. It really is, because then it's like, I never need to buy the fast version of any car again because it will never be the Plaid.
Right.
For and anyone that hasn't, if anyone hasn't read Car and Driver's Plaid review that came out this week sometime, they exactly echoed what Kyle said about a month ago, which was it's great in a straight line, but after you've stopped it about four times, your brakes will be on fire. And this is this is why Tesla are releasing a $20,000.
Brake upgrade?
Yeah, package next year.
Which is a really good value for a full carbon upgrade, by the way. I just want to mention.
And you need to buy that because if you want to drive, like the car is still limited. It hasn't got the top speed that they promised at launch. So what is it now, 148? Or it won't. The top speed is not the 200 miles an hour promised. But like Car and Driver were saying, but you wouldn't want to do it because at the current top speed that it's limited to, it's utterly horrible. You just feel like you're a second away from crashing, and then you try and stop it, and it won't stop if you've done it a couple of times already. But exactly what Kyle said when he first drove this, probably a couple of months ago.
I didn't read the review, but I read someone talking about the review, and they said something about wandering in its lane at like high speed or something.
They didn't they hated it at high speed.
Have you driven it in a straight line at high speed? Was it not planned at all?
I had it to its speed limiter, but not really on a highway. And not in an area where I was concerned so much with, you know, the side. I didn't have time to sit there. It was that's the limit, full brakes.
Right, you know okay.
Okay.
I have to get some Autobahn time with that then somehow.
Whenever it gets over to Germany, we'll do it. We got enough German friends now, and... we know people buying it over there. Some of the first ones that are promised, we'll go over and do a whole 200 mile an hour top speed. I think we get an M5 CS from BMW, which is like the Autobahn legend in the sedan way, because they do heat compensation with boost and altitude compensation. And it's just the M5 is, I would say, the legend of the Autobahn, if you will. And so I think it's got to at least match M5 down some of the straights between, you know, Stuttgart and Augsburg.
Right. So I drove don't buy the Plaid, just buy the Model S long range. So I drove that. There was a gentleman there who was, nice enough to let me take it for a little spin. He's on, I think it was Zach on Twitter at Black Model 3.
Zach with the Black Model 3 tag. I believe it's one of his family member's cars, and super nice of him to let you take it.
Yeah, no, it was really great. I got him to ride with me too. So this was my first time with the yoke. And it was a black car, but they have a red car on the screen. I'll just point that out. But
really?
Yes. Oh, we didn't talk. There was also a Plaid there that had a round steering wheel. We didn't talk about that.
We really shouldn't talk about that car.
Okay.
Because you probably shouldn't promote it.
Okay. But that was also interesting. That person was great to chat with. And
Ryan's awesome.
Yeah.
There are two things that about that yoke that, you know, that drive me crazy. Like, I obviously haven't driven it with the yoke, but I've watched a lot of people do it. Obviously, it was in the back seat of the car. But the two things that bother me is the turn signals.
Yeah.
Like, why can't you just put them on the back of the steering wheel? And then also, there's no like variable ratio in the steering. So if you're going to introduce something like that, in my opinion, you need to change how quickly that wheel moves. at slower speeds and higher speeds so that it can adjust appropriately, because you're going like this, and you've seen so many videos of people doing that, that if you just put a little motor in there that, you know, calibrates that appropriately, it, I think, would be a lot better of a, an experience.
Which is what Toyota have done with their new BZ4X. If that comes with a similar wheel, it's not going to go through 150 degrees, I think they said.
Right. It's an optional yoke in the BZ4X.
Yeah. Sorry, Lacey. Carry on.
No, it's okay. I was just saying, like, a lot of luxury brands even do this with the variable ratio steering. And I just think that, you know, it's just another one of those things that I'm like, well, if you're going to do that, why don't you just introduce something that makes the experience much more comfortable for people with something that already, you know, pretty much exists. I know they would probably want to make their own version of it, but still.
Right. Oh, EV Nomads, Brendan and Kelly are on the chat there. They were great.
There's I heard great... they're on their way to the British Virgin Islands right now for vacation or something like that.
Okay. There was some...
it was their channel that I referred to earlier with the Lucid. I think it was their channel. With the Lucid infotainment.
Yeah, Brendan flew to a privately owned vehicle to film some things with it. I believe he's the only one to ever review a privately owned Lucid. And guys, look, now the snow is starting. We finally have snow accumulation on our drive. Again.
Right. Again.
Again.
Brendan saying he did the Mach-E. We haven't actually talked about the Mach-E, but let me just say about the Tesla Model S long range. So I drove that with the yoke, and it was my first experience with the yoke, and I didn't mind it. I like the novelty of it, and I do like being able to see, because I'm tall, and the top of the steering wheel almost always, you know, cuts off. It gets in the way of the display. So I kind of like the novelty of it. You know, I don't like the buttons on the thing, like the horn is, like, why isn't the horn in the middle like it ought to be? And the turn signals should be left and right on each side of the wheel. Like Lacey said, on the back of the wheel would be fine, or I don't know. But just like, so we're in a parking garage, so getting in and out of it, it was like constant, like turning and things. And yeah, it was no problem. I didn't think about it. I didn't, you know, study how other people did it. I just like drove it and turned until I went to park it. And that was the time when, oh, this is a bit of a, you know, there's a bit of a learning curve here. But anyway, yeah, I just wanted to get that out of the way. So Mach-E, we had the Mach-E GT and a Mach-E GT Performance, or Mustang Mach-E GT Performance on hand, and in grabber blue, and I don't know, what's the orange color, Halloween orange?
Cyber
orange. Yeah, cyber orange.
Right, and they were great. I drove the this one here in grabber blue, the non... Did I drive them both? Yes, I did drive them both. Man, there's a lot of cars on that weekend. But see, yeah, so this was pretty cool. I liked being in the Mach-E. I'd been in them once before, but just getting into it, I really liked the layout of the inside of the cabin. Those seats look great. Those are the GT seats. And I did like the screen. I thought the navigation on this, I didn't have a problem with this one. This one got me back, and I could figure it out pretty quickly. And yeah, I really like the interior of the Mach-E. The ride on the non-performance, I didn't like so much. I thought it was very pedestrian. I thought it was maybe less than its price point. You know, I thought it didn't say quality to me. But in the performance version of the Mach-E GT, and they both had great acceleration, I just had them on the CD. I didn't get to drive them up the hill. I guess they can be prone to overheating if you lay into it for too long, but just like punching it on the street, like for half a second until you get up to, you know, the speed limit, it was very impressive, to say the least, definitely. But yeah, the ride and the performance, I really love this. It's got the Magna Ride suspension in that, and so if you're buying the GT. You know, I think it's well worth it to step up to, what, $5,000, is it, Kyle?
I don't know why you wouldn't spend the money. Just go for the performance edition. You'll get half of it back or more on resale anyway.
Right.
So it's really like a $2,500 delta. And then you're going to have so much better driving experience, better brakes, much better suspension, that, you know what, it's just free. I don't even know why they offer the non-performance edition, to be honest. But man, both of those cars put together, that Grabber Blue, that Cyber Orange, looked awesome. Have to say the Fords just came perfectly detailed, mint, and yeah, were really just beautiful to look at all weekend. And yeah, I recommended the GT to a friend of mine this week who I think fits the perfect use case for the car, which is basically never goes on twisty roads, but loves just wide open straight line blasts.
Right.
And yeah, just needed an SUV. I'm like, well, this is really the only one that fits the bill for what you're looking for. Model Y is going to be way too harsh to live with every day. And yeah, Mach-E GT performance is awesome. And yeah, was really, now that I didn't drive the one this weekend, but I have driven them before, but seeing how excited everyone was around that car, even people coming up to the charging station, it was pretty pretty exciting to see all the hype around the vehicle.
Slight increase to the pricing today for the 2022 model year, which is up anywhere between $1,000 and $3,000, depending on the version you go for. So now starting at $37,495, effectively, obviously, tax credit, if you, that is your liability for next year, up to sort of $61,500, again, with the credit included. Could be more incentives depending on where you live. So not a huge price bump from what it was for the old model year.
If you're a fan of the Mach-E, you should definitely check out the Mach-E vlog. They're just commenting here with us. And they were there, Liv and
Patrick.
Yes. Right. Thank you. They were great. That was like what the other thing about this event, just like meeting all the different people. There was a lot of great people, and Liv and Patrick were, you know, awesome. Very just enthusiastic people, and, you know, and yeah, it was great energy to be around them. And yeah, I just wanted to say that. So, anything else we want to talk about?
I mean, we're running long already, Dom. We're over time.
Okay. So, Arcimoto FUV was there. They had one with doors. That was kind of neat. I got to try them out. It's still not quite. I didn't drive it on the street. I don't know if you did, Lacey. But they do. They didn't have the torque vectoring, so it was still a bit of a challenge at low speed, you know, handling. But yeah.
I wish it didn't have like the handlebar steering. I wish it was something a little bit. Yeah, and also, the guy said that there's going to be some kind of update that comes where it makes it, like you said, a little easier to push and pull out of a spot when you're at lower speeds.
Right.
It's a fun little thing. I don't know. I helped Ryan Kilowatts film a video for that.
Okay.
And I was in the chase car, the Model Y, and he took it out on the highway, and I was like nervous for him, but it held its own. I was surprised.
Right. It's got a top speed of 75 miles an hour, I believe.
Yeah, something like that.
Oh, it smokes that. Whatever they rate it for, it goes way over. Yeah, allegedly.
All right on. All right. So we did have a couple of news stories that we were supposed to talk about today. The Lexus NX 450H Plus is entering the market this month. It's got 37 miles of EV range. It's got the same drivetrain as the Toyota RAV4 hybrid, I believe, plug-in hybrid.
Prime,
right. Thank you. And 55,650 MSRP, 18 kilowatt hour battery that's like in the RAV4 Prime. And so yeah, check that out. The article's up on Inside EVs. And also,
why wouldn't you just buy a used I-Pace with 100,000 miles certified warranty at that point?
I like the I-Pace so much. I don't know.
Me too. We need to do more I-Pace stuff.
Yeah, we can't.
I saw one on the highway in like full slammed efficiency mode on the 22s, and I was like, oh, that thing looks so good.
Right. Yeah. It's just, I think people are disappointed by the range and the charging speed. That's where it falls down a bit. But
yeah, but I don't think anyone's ever tested on the new software. It was supposed to get better.
Okay.
We just filled up, by the way. This is the future. In about 45 seconds, we went from zero to full range.
Except you've been parked there for like a good 5 minutes.
Oh, yeah, because you went in to use the restroom and get some snacks and stuff.
So,
but
right. Yeah. As one does, right? So anyway.
Yeah, but still. Cold weather, future here, fuel.
Okay. So other story I needed to mention real quick because it's on our thumbnail, so we need to mention it. The BMW i3 will be a sedan in the future, but maybe only the China-only market. So this story is on the Inside EV's website as well. There's a Chinese website, government website, that puts out images and specs of cars like long before the automakers, I think, release them really. And so you can see that they've got a BMW 3 long wheelbase car that's electrified, and it's carrying the i3 nameplate for some reason. And so I don't know if that means like the i3 hatch that some of us love is going away soon, and that's name's going to go to that car, but only in that market. I don't know.
No, I think the i3 is becoming the 3 Series, as far as I know, by the way. Now, I've asked a couple of people this. I asked Tom, because Tom knows everyone at BMW. Mm-hmm. It wasn't on the show. It must have been after the show or something. And he just looked at the camera and was like, I don't know what I'm allowed to tell you, so I'm not going to say anything, which was fun, because I don't know whether he knew or not. But I asked somebody else who should know the answer to this months ago, and they're like, yeah, we don't know whether we've made that public or not, but there is going to be a new i3. The i3 is the 3 Series. Like, we're not going to just let the i3 name die out with what we know as the i3. There we'll have the i2, i3, i4, i5. So it's kind of semi-public knowledge, but I don't know if it's meant to be or not. Well, I guess it's not anymore because these Chinese images are out. But yeah, right. The 3 Series is the i3, as far as I've understood it, for quite a long time now as well.
Man. Well,
so... But maybe it's not public. Who knows?
Right. There's not a whole lot we can say about it. No one's driven it yet. And
it's a 3 Series. It looks exactly like a 3 Series.
But it's a long wheelbase 3 Series.
Yeah, because it's China, and they love their long wheelbase cars in China.
Right. So when we look at it, I don't know. I don't get 3 Series vibes. I don't know, Lacey, if you have any opinion on this.
I think the Lord for small kidney grills. I think it looks good compared to everything else they're putting out. So
not a fan of the IX, I take it then.
I don't like the grill. And it's just like what everybody else is saying. It's just, it's too big.
Okay.
Like, nope. No, thank you. I mean, I like the IX. I love that the form factor is very similar in size to the X5. I like the interior of it. I've liked the interior of the new XM plug-in hybrid that they came out with. But I just can't do that front grill.
Right. I'm on team big grill, by the way, BMW. I love it. It's in your face and so obnoxious. I think it'll sell cars. But anyway, so I guess we're well over time now. So I guess that brings us to the end of our show. If you have any questions or comments, you can leave them on the Inside EVs forum podcast thread or on our YouTube or Twitch comment sections. If you like the show, please give us a thumbs up if you're watching us on YouTube. Don't forget, you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. You can follow Martin Lee at EV News Daily. Kyle Connor is at It's Kyle Connor. Lacey, you're at, what's your Twitter handle?
At Miss Go Electric, all one word.
All right. And I'm at Dominic_Y. Please click subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications, and we'll see you all again next week. Ciao.